Any better than last one? No.
I thought it would be better.
Yeah. Not happening.
I'm frustrated with this. Like, I can't do this.
There's too many things going on.
Yeah, I've just finished the elocution routines. And I think next week I'll have at least one system call to you.
Can you independently, or you're, I'm assuming you're testing the allocator independently of everything else, right? Or no?
Yeah.
Are you able to do it?
Yeah.
Through some custom system call? Or?
Yes.
Hmm. So how do you know it's working?
Like, I created two separate program, user program, and through one custom system call, I allocated some portion from physical memory and write something there. And
you
then
created two different regions, or this is your, right now you're supporting only one region.
One region.
Only
yeah.
One region.
Okay.
This is the.
Even lower level.
The KML up level. Reading a page and just writing.
Okay, and then
by another another program, I retrieve that information that what I wrote is valid.
So the first program quits.
Yes.
And then you start
then
the second.
Then you start the second program.
Then how do you? What does the system call do? Just it does a mapping or it does an allocation and mapping separately?
At first, system call it does the allocation, and then the second system call it does only mapping.
Okay, so the way that the first application works would be allocate, map,
yeah,
and write.
Yes.
The second application, map and read.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. And sounds reasonable. So your next goal is to
create region.
Create a region
and restore the information in memory.
Mm-hmm.
Also in
I think he has to wait for me to finish this back of things. So that
well, that's only for crash consistency.
Yeah.
But he could, he doesn't really have to wait for what you're doing, right?
Mm. So, Leo told me about the memory device.
Mm.
It's a character device and it has the memory. It has everything written there, which is in the physical memory, the mem.
Including the, for all zones, including any new zones that you might create?
There's some, I read the manual and there's some limitations, restrictions there. But you can create the MEM device without restrictions with some system call.
Okay, so you can read and write.
Yes. Yeah. There is another one which, this is about the physical byte addresses, physical address, physical memory is a MEM. And there's another one, KMEM, which is the virtual memory of the kernel.
Okay.
So I think we can check both. Initially, I have to use the MEM to save the, only the NVMe portion, but we can check both for the to see the mapping of the virtual memory with the physical ones.
Mm-hmm.
We can get the KMM also.
Why do you need the map? Because you, when you restore it, you need to
just to figure out if everything is mapped correctly. Because we can save both portion, KMM and MEM,
mm-hmm,
and let us see if the mapping is correct or something.
So since the backup and store of the non-volatile memory region could be done using script.
Yeah. Yeah, then I have to write some complicated kernel level code. Yes. So that's certainly an improvement over your original plan. Okay, so I guess that's what you're currently working on. Is that right? Okay, great. Leo, do you want to summarize what you're doing?
Yeah, well, what I'm doing right now is It's implemented in the slab allocator. I have the basic functionality of the page allocator working. So now I'm building the slab allocator.
So the page allocator would retrieve pages from a region, from an NVM file, PPMFS file, I guess.
I made an unidirectional layer.
Okay, so that
I have the slab allocator.
Uh-huh.
And then here I have something called page allocator.
Uh-huh.
For now I'm using something here called that I call the file mapper.
Okay.
But I could use here the numerator memory.
You mean the region manager?
The region manager.
Mm.
Well, of course, this guy.
Interacts with PMFS?
Yeah, this is PMFS here, and this is whatever we have. I'm assuming that we're going to have a user level library as well.
For the NVM region manager?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. It could just be a pass through. Yeah.
So this guy defines a set of operations to allocate pages, and then the slab allocator talks directly to it. And then whether you use this one or this one, the allocation will go to this one or this one.
It sounds like a great idea.
And it has the indirect advantage that you could have one application could create multiple containers and a container could use one allocator or the other. Because of this interaction layer.
So you're saying that you've already done the page allocator part with the file mapper layer?
Yeah, I have this done. Now I'm working on this guy.
And this file mapper basically takes pages from a PMFS file for now and maps it into the container address space.
All it does is it will get you a page, a memory map, and give you the address. That's all it does.
So the memory mapping address in hint can the page allocator provide a hint to where to map it? No.
I could modify the APIs to do that. As of now, everything that I'm providing, all everything that it takes is the size of the page you want to memory map, and it will return to you that and the Lima address of this page.
Would be worth considering the mmap interface for that operation. To build an interface that's similar to mmap.
To build an interface similar to mmap.
So look at the arguments of mmap and see whether all those arguments make sense or not. And maybe there are some additional arguments.
Why do you think it would be good to have
Because mmap has the hints for where to map the page in the virtual address space. That's an added functionality that mmap provides.
Right. It also has protection
and all of that ability, which could potentially be useful. So,
yeah.
For instance, you could have a read-only container that, because it's versioned, let's say it's a snapshot. And
yeah, that's a good idea.
So you might think about whether you want to, whether you can directly use mmap.
Yeah.
For the fmapper layer.
That sounds good. That's a good idea.
You can either use mmap directly or recreate an equivalent of mmap with something more potentially.
Okay.
For the NVM region manager, it has an alloc and a map as well. So that map may also be similar to mmap, possibly. So you could have like this page allocator layer that uses mmap as a fundamental mapping mechanism. But internally, the file descriptor that nmap uses could either be a file system, or could be a file descriptor equivalent of a region.
Right. So what they take is something that I call a handler, which is an instructor that has metadata about the mechanism that you allocate memory or allocate memory here.
Right, and this library layer might have to translate an mmap that's coming from the page allocator, because those two mmaps might be similar to something that NVM syscall, an equivalent NVM syscall. Because you cannot directly call mmap on NVM region.
I think we should avoid
a file descriptor or something.
I think we should avoid also the use of system calls, adding new system calls to the kernel.
So, how does the NVM region manager expose itself then?
We make a user level library that provides a nice interface.
Oh, yeah. But the user level library would need to use system calls.
Right, but what we could do is just use ioctls so that we don't have to add a new system call.
If the ioctl is going to accomplish the same objective.
It has more acceptance if you do it like that, because adding a system call, you know, there's a fixed number to it, and changing that, it's complicated. But where an ioctl is already there, system call that's already there, and you can pass parameters, and you don't need to... Well, the amount of modification that required the kernel is minimum. Actually, you don't need any, because you can build a kernel module, and when you raise the kernel module, then raise the handle for those ioctls.
I see. Is that what people are doing now?
Yeah.
Instead of writing syscalls?
In fact, the book says that you should try to avoid adding the system calls.
And use ioctls instead? Does it say that as well?
Well, there's no other way.
Well, one thing that you could do is add new
sys
file system entries or proc file system entries.
Right. Those are the other ways.
Yeah.
You can create files and then communicate to those files.
No, I mean, I'm talking about proc and sys files, which are not real
files.
Yes.
Those. You can use those as well. I mean, read and write to the...
We are building a prototype. We are not shipping it, right? So, this whatever we do needs to be convenient for our development. Whether it eventually gets into the kernel or what modifications we need to do to get it accepted into the mainline kernel is much farther in my thought process than. Where we are right now, we are still in the prototype, initial stages of prototype.
I agree, but if it's possible to build it, to put everything in the kernel module, so we don't have to touch the kernel, it's better and it's easier for us as well, because then moving the project around, it's just moving a set of files that you can compile and run.
I completely agree. The only reason not to do it would be that it complicates our development cycle.
Right.
But if it makes it easier, I mean, especially if it makes it easier, I would certainly encourage going in that direction.
Can we convert the system calls if we need to act?
Don't worry about that for now.
We already have some system calls.
You have some
templates,
system calls.
Templates.
Don't worry about that.
We can change that later.
It's fairly straightforward. I'm building this library. It's easy as well. That's not a problem.
Okay, so that's good. So you have a page allocator and the fmapper built, and now you're building a slab allocator on top of it. Is this slab allocator similar to what we did?
Yeah.
Is a page table implementation?
It's very similar. I'm recycling most of those ideas, but I'm writing the code from scratch, with the hoping that I will end up with a cleaner code and more organized. And also, the indexing of the metadata to do fast lookups, because for this guy, you need to do couple of basic operations. You need to be able to allocate persistent memory of arbitrary size. You need to be able to free that. And to do this operation fast, you need to be able to find an available slab.
Of the right size.
Of the right size, or find a new one. You need to index all this. So I'm using TreeSpan to do all the indexing. The other project does a mix of trees and hash tables, and the hash tables are coming from this other library that's pain in the butt to compile and make it and link it to your code. It's this
glib.
Yeah, and it's not even that good in terms of performance. I remember that we ended up replacing many of those trees with trees that we brought from the BSD kernel because they perform better.
Okay.
So I'm getting rid of all that. But the idea and the design is the same ideas.
Okay. Well, some of the slab allocators, instead of using bitmaps, they use free lists, right, of addresses contained in the slab that are available. So that's an alternative design that people have looked at. We decided to go with the bitmap-based management of free space, free slots in the slab.
You said a free list?
Yeah, free list.
So you create, once you make one allocation at a given size and you add in more, you just add more pages to that slab?
No, these are free list of slots within a single slab.
Oh.
So if you have a... So the hierarchy is that you have caches that satisfy allocations of a given size, right? Or a range of sizes. Each cache has potentially multiple slabs depending on how much memory space you need for that allocation unit, right? And within each slab, is a contiguous region of memory, maybe a page size in your case. So you need to keep track of what's, bits in each slab consists of many slots, right? You need to keep track of which slots are available and which ones are used, right? So the way we keep track of it in SoftPM is using a bitmap.
Yeah.
An alternate way is using a free list of which slots are available. So this free list of slot addresses or slot offsets, let's say, slab offsets.
Yeah, I see.
So that's a possibility. The advantage there is that you don't need to scan the bitmap to find a free slot. You just take the head of the free list and that's your next available slot.
Right.
Something becomes free, you add to the free list.
Right. So
that's an alternative there.
The way I'm doing it now is similar. Maybe if I describe it to you, you have my improved design. There's so much data to index. It's horrible. So this guy is a page directory. Sorry. This is, I call it the slab directory. And then this one is the inner, outer, slab inner, slab outer.
You mean the outer and inner, you reverse them, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, then I call it like this. So, it's going to be very confusing.
So, like maybe you can change it now that it's early enough in the project.
This is typically called outer and
this
is inner.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand. This is closer to the whole thing.
No, the inner is further deeper into the tree.
Oh, I see. That's
Okay.
And then here, this one has built up already in here the slab entries.
Yeah.
Right. Slab entries. Of course, here what I have is an array of two pointers. And the Lima address as well. And here, similar. But I have a portion here dedicated to data structures to index the slab entries. Here I have I have three trees, and one linked list. So, of course, this guy, if we maximize it, it has a bitmap.
Mm-hmm.
A size, it has a Lima address and a memory address. What else do you have? Oh, yeah. And I have a union.
So why do you need both Lima address and memory address? I guess so that you can
when I'm restoring
fix pointers.
And to restore as well.
And to restore, to find out
yeah.
what to restore.
Yeah, what's the next page that I need to read?
Mm.
And then here I also have...
do you need the memory address? I guess you do, because you need to walk the pointers in this table.
Right. I guess I could potentially recycle the same pointer for both, but I want to stay away from that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now what I'm saying is that that bitmap is a varying size, right? Or it's a fixed size, but it allows for the maximum. You could replace that with a pointer to a free space list. A free list.
Yeah, well, so this guy will have the database, and then the logic is if this size is bigger than half of a page, then I don't have to do anything with that bitmap.
Mm.
I have some internal fragmentation on the page. If not, then the bitmap has a fixed size, which is the size of the page divided by 8. So what you would say is that I have here the header of the list, and it will be pointing to the different offsets.
By the way, the first page will contain the root structure, right? The
yes.
First data page.
Yes. And then also here I have an index. Well, it's a union.
Mm.
It's a union. What I have here is a tree and a list.
Mm.
And what that means is that when I initialize this level, this level, this level, and this level, right? And then I make all these slab entries part of a linked list here that has pointers to three entries. Three slab entries that hasn't been initialized. That's just to try to find quickly any slab entry that is uninitialized. But then the tree, here I also have a tree for slab entries that are full and slab entries that are not full. Why do I need both? Well, if I am looking for an entry to allocate memory, I don't want to search in the full ones. So if an entry is not full, it will be used the same pointer, but it will be indexing a tree of non-full slab entries. If it's full, I'll move it to the other tree. And the cost here in metadata is just one more pointer. I just need one more pointer to a different route.
Hmm.
That's it. And then...
Are those lists persistent? Are those trees persistent?
The trees... All this metadata is inside this, and this is allocated persistently, so it is persistent.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm talking about these trees that are...
This one here? Mm-hmm. The root pointers are also persistent. It's allocated inside this guy. And the way we allocate all this is using persistent memory.
Okay. Alright, go ahead.
So when I initialize this level, I added all this to the full list. And as I made requests, I'm going to start initializing this and add it to the tree of non-full. Once they get full, I'm get it out of there and put it the other place. So the operations are, if you say, I want to allocate memory, then I need to look up in my trees, find the ones that are not full.
And if the size is appropriate, you need to check that as well.
Right, so that's another thing. I also have a tree that what it has, every node of the tree is a header of a list for a given size of allocation. So this is, let's say this is 8, I have a header here and I have a point list to the slabs that are not full of this size.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I find by the size. And then to free memory, this data structure is not enough.
Yeah,
I have to contact the page allocator and say, hey, what's the page that contains this memory address? This guy keeps that mapping. And then,
but You mean what is the?
So to allocate memory, you just pass me the size, and I will find either an slab allocator with that size.
And when you free it, you get an address.
But I guess just an address.
So you can compute the page address that contains that.
No, I cannot. I don't know where it's mapped. What I get is a memory address. It's not a Lima address.
It's a virtual address.
It's a virtual address.
Okay.
So the quick way to find what's the Lima address for it is to ask the page allocator.
Why do you need the Lima address as opposed to just the virtual address?
Oh,
the page?
Just to avoid having to have all these guys also indexed by the memory address.
But you have it there, right? I mean, inside there.
Oh, but this is indexed by Lima address, not memory address. Or maybe can I just avoid? Can I just have it as memory address and not as Lima address? If I have it as Lima addresses, then I don't have to come to the page allocator. Because I will know where my mapping is. That would be enough. If I don't have it as, why do I need a Lima address?
I don't know. It all depends on the Lima address is the physical address, right? In our case, the physical address of the person in memory,
right? Or an offset in a file. I think I can just do a Lima address, but then when I restore,
you mean virtual address?
Yeah, virtual address. But when I restore, I have to rebuild the tree anyway. Because rebuilding the tree is basically updating these pointers. Yeah, I think it's sufficient. I don't need any other operations. The things that we need from here is allocate, free, and that's about it. I don't need anything else.
Discovery? What about discovery? That's an internal operation.
Yeah, that's completely... it's not even part of the slab allocator. Yeah. So in discovery, I also need to do... In discovery, the lookups are based on memory addresses, not Lima addresses. So I should probably... Yeah, I don't think I need this guy to be in this by Lima address.
Well, I would say before you make any changes, make sure that you run through it a couple of times. Through all the operations before you make a significant change to the existing design, because we did spend quite a bit of time coming up there with that initial design. But it's very possible that some things are no longer required in first memory.
Yeah. Okay, so this is where I am right now.
Well, it sounds reasonable. It's,
So that
up there, that tree that you draw up there, is basically a tree of caches in a slab allocator. The tree of caches, every cache is an allocation unit. And every cache has, therefore, a set of slabs. Every slab is a contiguous portion of the virtual address space. And every slab contains a number of slots, which can be potentially used to serve this allocation request for that size.
Right. So for every node, since we have a list of slabs for the same size, it should be fairly straightforward to deal with memory fragmentation in our slab, because we already have... this list, all the slabs are the same ones. So we have several that are partially empty, we can compact. And
You cannot really compact it like that because you'll have to fix back pointers if you move things around. You'll have to do pointer fixing if you move stuff.
No. This is just the slab entry, the page remains the same. I'm talking about compacting the slab entries. No, the data page remains where it is.
Mm,
Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay, so you're compacting that,
right.
Not the slabs themselves.
I'm reducing the amount of slab entries. Because if I have, let's say, one with two and the second one with three, I can merge just two and get rid of one.
You cannot, because don't you have to then make sure that all of them are in the same slab? All these entries are in the same slab?
They will be in the same, and that's fine, right?
No, but for them to be in the same slab, you have to change their virtual address.
So the counting of the page, yeah, you're right. Because I will have to actually move the data in this page.
Mm-hmm.
Because the after this is given by the bitmap here.
Yeah.
And the size.
Well, one way to do it is to make sure that you do not create more fragmentation. So what I mean by that is when you choose a slot to use, choose a slot from a slab that's close to full. It's less likely to be, less likely to be freed in the near future, on slots to be freed in the near future. If you have a slab that's mostly empty, and then another slab that's mostly full, you want to fill up the mostly full slab before you start using a space in the mostly empty slab at any given point in time. Because what could happen is that the mostly empty slab allocations could be freed, and then you can reclaim the entire slab.
Sure.
It's more possible.
But that means that I have to maintain the list ordered.
Sorted by how many free slots.
And that could be expensive. It could take your time there.
Yeah. So I think for in the beginning, you probably don't need to worry about that optimization.
No.
But since you brought up compaction, I was saying that it's one way to reduce fragmentation is to be more intelligent about where you're pulling your allocation units from when you have multiple slabs.
Yeah, I'm assuming you guys will have to do something like that too, right? You don't need to have similar stuff to keep track of.
But their allocations are page granular. They don't have any semantic data. For instance, they don't distinguish pointers and data.
Mm.
But you're saying that they might want to build a similar slab allocator for kernel use inside the kernel?
Oh, that's right. That's the other thing, right? It's possible we want to have them. If we want the kernel to consume these, to allocate resisting objects. And, okay. Oh, another thing, yeah. Remember that I mentioned to you that I found this atomic operation of up to 8 bytes in PMFS.
Mm-hmm.
It is using 3 different places, but it's all related to the mounting and unmounting operation and the filling of the superblock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically metadata management of the file system. It's not used to provide a transactional operation or anything like that.
How about a journal commit? PMFS uses a journal, right?
A journal?
In an earlier discussion that I had with the NetApp people today, the guy at NetApp was saying that he's also looking at PMFS code, and he said that PMFS implements journaling.
I don't know. Journaling,
yeah. What he said. So the commit operation in PMFS is whenever there is an fsync, that's when the all the modifications are committed to the journal.
The fsync is a no-op.
Fsync is a no-op. It's a no-op. Oh, so I don't know what PMFS version he's looking at. Because he was saying that journal gets committed when there is an fsync or something like that. You should talk to Daniel. He was also here during that meeting.
Hmm. could be that he was talking about the older file system, the BPFS.
No, it's not, because BPFS is not open source. We were talking about PMFS.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's an op.
Really?
What version do you have? Because I was looking today and I think they just updated it 5 days ago.
My version is probably a little bit older than that, not much older than that. And this conversation is much older than 5 days.
Which conversation?
The ones you're referring to.
No, this previous meeting when Daniel was here.
Oh!
Yeah.
Could it be that they just added that?
I don't know.
That's not a... like... that's a significant...
You should look at what, you know... I mean, this... and there's no reason for me not to believe what he's saying. But it's just possible that you're looking at two different versions.
Oh, no, no, I'm not saying that he's mistaken or anything like that. Probably, I'm most likely I misinterpreted the code, but I remember looking at the super.zip file, which is where you initialize all the registration of the data structure you have to pass to BFS. And there I saw, oh, look, this is the file sync. I was looking for it because you suggested you should look into this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a no op.
That's surprising. Okay, well, I don't know what to say. Maybe these are two different versions. Maybe either the fsync was more complicated earlier and now it became a no-op because they realized it was not necessary to be so complicated, or was no-op earlier and now they actually have something going on there. In any case, it might make sense to look at if there is a recent commit that you have missed, it might make sense to look at it as well.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right, guys. So that's good. I guess you all continue to do whatever you're doing. It seems like you have your plates full already. So you don't need new tasks at this point, right?
No.
So hopefully your workload gets a little lighter so you can make progress. And our goal is the USENIX annual tech deadline, which is towards the end of January. It's one issue is that December break, hardly things get done. So, it's something for us to keep in mind.
Okay.
All right, I'll see you guys in class.
I'm going to be putting together